The hour of 12:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order Higher Education Finance and Policy. Thank Representative Dorhol for taking over last week. And on the agenda, we have House File 983. I believe Ms. Grimes is here and ready to go. This will be, or parts of this, will be in the Higher Education Bill as a policy component. We'll explain more of that after we get done with the discussion of House File 983. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. House File 983 is indeed the Office of Higher Education agency policy bill. Would you like me to proceed through the sections to explain the bill, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
All right. In Article 1, Section 1, is language that has to do with the statewide longitudinal education data system, and it explicitly gives the Office of Higher Education and deed permission to share data from the unemployment insurance wage data. That is how SLEDs will match up what is happening as students leave post-secondary education and are getting experience in the workforce. Section 2 is an amendment to the language on the Higher Education Advisory Council, which currently consists of the system heads of the University of Minnesota, Minsk Youth Private College Council, a representative of the Minnesota Career College Association, and the Commissioner of Education. This would add the Director of the Office of Higher Education and the Commissioner of Deed to that council and make it advisory to the governor and the legislature rather than to the Office of Higher Education.
Ms. Grimes, can you tell me the last time this council actually met?
Mr. Chairman, I am not certain, but I believe it was about a year and a half ago.
A year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if this council was eliminated, what would we lose?
Mr. Chairman, this council has been used in the past as a good forum for the system heads to talk through issues with each other and work together. It has not been active recently.
A council that has not met for a year and a half, we need to continue because, fill in that sentence.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it would be for the reason it was put in statute in the first place, for to make sure that these system heads are talking to each other and working together.
Ms. Grimes, they haven't met for a year and a half, so they haven't done anything. How can they report or advise if they haven't met? And I'm not saying that they should have met, but it's a curious thing that we're trying to make something larger that hasn't met in a year and a half and advised anyone.
Mr. Chair, the purpose of the language in the agency bill is to make the act matter and to give it an explicit role in advising the governor and the legislature.
So, Ms. Grimes, what we have here is a curious, warm, fuzzy that when it meets, if it meets, should it meet, might actually advise us on something, but we're not terribly sure why, because it hasn't met in a year and a half. And over the last year and a half, and you don't have to answer this, there have been some really large issues in higher ed. You don't need to answer it, but I think this one may bear some study. I realize that the students may want an amendment to be on a council that doesn't meet, and if I were a student, that would be my goal maybe too, but this one we may have to revisit as to why we need to continue something that really doesn't function. So go ahead, proceed.
Section 3 of the bill streamlines the definition of resident student for purposes of state grant and other state student aid programs. This language, to begin with, about 12 years ago, was changed to try to make sure that a student couldn't be a resident of another state attending 100% online and get a state grant. At the time that we made that change in that language, it was not really anticipated that a student might attend 100% online and be a resident of Minnesota. And so we're trying to clarify and make sure that that language is clear now. And then we are also trying to streamline some of the exceptions that have crept into the law over the years on things such as students from Hurricane Katrina, students that relocate here because of military service and so forth. Section 4 of the bill clarifies an existing citation to federal law on the definition of independent student. frankly, in this one, we're trying to be proactive. The federal government is due to reauthorize the Higher Education Act in the next few years, and so the section of federal code defining independent student is likely to change, and we tried to go to the more generic definition so we don't have to change state law every time the feds change the numbering of their law. Section 5 is language, somewhat technical language, that provides that a student who withdraws from enrollment due to a major illness is entitled to an additional semester of eligibility for a child care grant. We previously, the legislature had adopted language that made that true for state grants, and this would extend that same language to the child care grant program. Section 6 is another citation in that of the federal law on the definition of independent student, and we're making it more of a generic reference so that we don't have to change every time the feds change their numbering. Section 7 has to do with surety bonds, which are required for some private institutions operating in Minnesota, and it basically provides that there is a mechanism by which the surety bond company could cancel those bonds. Section 8 requires that as a condition of registration with the Office of Higher Education, a school provide training programs to their faculty and staff that include recommendations about the limits of advice staff or faculty may can provide to a student when it comes to financial aid and transfer of credit policies.
Ms. Grimes, on this one, I believe the private colleges have met with you and said that they already do this and they may want some language that would not put them under this because they already do it.
Mr. Chairman, they have some alternative language which accomplishes pretty much the same thing in a way they find more acceptable, and that language is fine with the Office of Higher Education.
All right. I'm just trying to anticipate for the committee that we may have some amendments here as you can see us moving forward. So, and just to acknowledge to people who are in the audience that we have been listening to them, and hopefully we'll address them as we get through this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Section 9 of the bill clarifies that a school that is regulated by the Office of Higher Education because of being a private institution could appeal an order if the office were seeking to terminate their ability to participate in financial aid programs. Section 10 is sometimes referred to as the MOOC language. It exempts schools that provide exclusively free training or instructional programs from the registration requirement with the Office of Higher Education.
Ms. Grimes, do they register with you now?
Mr. Chairman, some do and some don't, frankly. When it comes to schools offering just online instruction to Minnesota students, if they are a national provider, they do not always know that the student is a Minnesota resident who is taking their course. The U.S. Department of Education about 18 months ago started cracking down and saying that all schools receiving federal financial aid have to be legally operating in the states in which the students are taking instruction. And so institutions across the country are having to register and be licensed by state after state. The Office of Higher Education is one of the leaders of a multi-state effort, more than 30 states, to try to kind of arrange a reciprocity agreement whereby if you met the qualifications in one state, you would be considered acceptable to provide instructions to students in another state. That program is that pilot process, it's called the SARA process, State Approval Reciprocity. I forget what the final A stands for. But that process is not quite ready for states to do, but we are working on that.
So, Ms. Graham, there's no requirement that you monitor them now, or is there?
Mr. Chairman, to the extent right now that we come across information indicating that a Minnesota student is taking courses from one of these institutions and being charged tuition for it, we do contact the school and ask them to register or be licensed by us.
But that's a different issue than one that's not offering tuition. I mean, what you're actually saying here is you don't want to monitor the ones that are offering no tuition or fee. It's just a free online course.
Right. Mr. Chairman, frankly, the whole rationale for our regulatory statutes assumed that students were being charged tuition and that they needed protection, consumer protection, on the basis of being charged tuition. As these massive open online courses developed, then the question became, since the students weren't being charged tuition, did they really have to register with us? And this language would say that if it's free, they don't have to register with us.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Section 11 This is parallel to the training language that we talked about earlier for the private colleges. This particular section pertains to the schools that are non-degree granting schools and regulated under our Chapter 141. Chapter 12 is again the language, the MOOC language, the for courses that are exclusively free. This is the part of it that would be in Chapter 141, which is the non-degree granting schools. Section 13 is another section of the language that has to do with the statewide longitudinal education data system and use of unemployment insurance data in order to be able to track students into their experience in the workforce. And Section 14 has to do with public safety officer survivor benefits. And this is a parallel of that language that says that a student who withdraws due to a major illness could get an additional term of eligibility for financial aid. Article 2 of the bill has to do with terminating institutions from participating in state financial aid programs. Most of this language is already in our rules. We are moving it from rules to statute. Some of the institutions that are subject to this language are quite tiny institutions, and they may not fully understand the whole rules process. And in addition, we are asking to increase the kinds of situations in which we might be able to terminate an institution from participating in state financial aid programs. These increased requirements have to do with misuse of state funds. If we observe a consistent pattern of noncompliance with Minnesota laws, rules, and policies, misappropriation of student aid funds, falsification of information, or if an institution is terminated from participation in federal programs by the U.S. Department of Education, then those would be circumstances under which we might be able to terminate them from participating in state financial aid programs. I would like to, as background, remind the committee that we do not take action to terminate institutions from participation in state financial aid programs very often. Usually when our auditors talk with them about what they're doing wrong, they try very hard to shape up and meet our requirements and be able to show us that they're being good stewards of the state financial aid money. However, there are circumstances, usually applying to extremely tiny schools, where we need to be able to say at some point, we've tried and tried to help you do it right, we've given you training, we've given you additional help from our staff, and we just are not confident that you're using the money as intended by law.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm trying to picture what kind of school you're talking about. Can you give me an example?
Ms. Grimes.
For example, a tiny little truck driving school that has very small staff might be an example of the kind of school that would be involved in such a thing.
Representative Johnson. Proceed.
Mr. Chairman, all of the rest of this section has to do with termination of institutions, and then the repealer at the end repeals the rules, which are being replaced by moving that language from rules to statute. And that is the end of the bill.
Questions, members? All right, seeing no questions, Ms. Grimes, you might want to stay just in case something else comes up. I'm going to move to the next item on the agenda, and this is the beginning of the Omnibus Higher Education Finance and Policy Bill. And what you're going to see today, we saw what might be a good part of the policy. We're still meeting with the legislative auditor to take a look at what language we may put in dealing with oversight, and that you won't see today. But I want to have Ms. Adrians go over the spreadsheet on how the $150 million above base is being covered at this point. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to pass out the spreadsheet and any other data. Ms. Adrians will go over it. If you have questions, we can entertain questions today, but this is the first time you've seen it. I then am going to wait a week so everyone will have a chance to digest this. I'll meet with Representative Nornes in the Republican caucus, and we'll meet as a Democratic caucus to look over this also to see what you might have for changes or suggestions. And then on Monday morning, we will put together the Higher Education Finance and Policy Bill, which will be due in Ways and Means that same week. So this will give us a week to have everyone take a look at what we have and what you may want to have changed. So, Ms. Adrians, you want to explain the document you're working off of?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, you should have two spreadsheet-looking items in your packets. The one that I will be going over is just the one-page summary, but it, if you want more information about what is included in all of the base numbers, there's a four-page summary or a four-page spreadsheet as well, and I'm happy to talk to you about that at length at any time. But for today, we'll just kind of work off that summary page.
And just as a reminder, members, we are at 150 over base. The Senate is at 250 over base, and the governor was at 240 over base. So we're looking at a gap of at least $100 million here between the two bills that we would go into conference committee with. So if there is something that you don't see yet, remember the target could be higher. Of course, it could be lower. Ms. Aid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I'll try to just kind of orient you a little bit to the summary page so you know what you're looking at. As the chair said, the target the committee was given is $150 million over the base for 14 and 15. This is about a 6% increase. The governor's recommendations are the you know, kind of that middle column, and these are the ones that were updated as of March of 2013. And then the House recommendations are the column on the far right. The governor's proposal, his increase was, I think it was about approximately 10% over the base numbers. Each system that's included in within the committee appropriations bill is going to be listed on the far left side, and they're all in the bold font. So we have the Office of Higher Ed, the Mayo Foundation, MinSCU, and the University of Minnesota. And if you're looking for their base numbers, that top line for each one, that's kind of our starting point. Those are the when we talk about the base numbers. The total for all of our accounts in base funding was about $2.56 billion, just to give you some reference. Now, the change items, the governor has a number. They're all in italics, and they say change item. The governor, you can look at all of his recommendations, and we've had some testimony as to what those are. The House change items that are included in the $150 million target for the Office of Higher Ed. So the first one, it says the increased grants for access choice debt reduction. What that is, it's putting additional funding into the state grant program. And what you'll find in the delete all amendment is it's specifically decreasing the assigned family responsibility for independent students. So there is more information in the amendment where you can see what the percentage changes would be. The cost of doing that, we're only putting one-time money, and it's approximately $11 million for the current biennium. There's also a base adjustment at the that's at the bottom of that Office of Higher Education portion. And what this is a 1% increase in salary rates. And you'll see this in agencies. All of the agencies are doing this just to catch up, I guess. For the Mayo Foundation, there are no change items. For MinSCU, the change item is for tuition relief. There is $78 million in the 14 and 15 biennium to help offset what I think would have been about a 3% tuition increase. And then that money goes out into the tails as well. It increases to $105 million for 16 and 17. And that's the only MinSCU change. And then the University of Minnesota, there are three change items here. The first is about $42.6 million. This is also to offset tuition increase. This would be specifically for residential undergraduate students. And it would have been, I think, again, approximately a 3% increase. And in the tails, that amount goes up to $56.8 million. The next change item is MinDrive. The governor had this recommendation as well, and he funded it at $36 million for each biennium, and this recommendation funds it at $18 million for each biennium. You did hear some information, but there are also more details on what MinDrive is on page 12 of the amendment. And then the third change item, it's Labor Education Service. This was also in the governor's recommendation, but he had it, it was money that was being taken out of the MinDrive appropriation, and the university requested that we kind of put it in the proper place where it should be included in the bill, so we separated it out. This is $250,000 for each biennium, and it's a program that's in, it's housed in the Carlson School of Management. So you can find, if you look toward the bottom, not the very last line, but the line above it, where it says change items total. This is where you'll see we're $126,000 under the $150 million. So the number of change, it's $149,874,000 for anyone that's counting pennies here. And then in the tails, it's $180,100,000. So we're just $124,000 over our target. And that's about it. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to.
Ms. Adrians, can you explain on the tuition what it costs us to keep tuition from a 3% increase with the numbers? What are we looking at for 1%, 2%, and 3% in each system?
Oh, you know what, Mr. Chair? I did not bring that document.
She'll get it.
I will provide that, though.
And this is one of the core things we've talked about all session. This proposal, there would be no increase in tuition for students in either of the two systems in the undergraduate programs. There would be minimal new spending. You've seen the MinDrive, and you've also seen the independent student, the grant. So that would be pretty much the bill. And $150 million doesn't go a long way when we're trying to hold tuition down. So that's the bill in essence. Today, because you've seen it for the first time, I want to make sure everyone has time to digest all of this, and that's why we're going to wait a week. Now, I want to remind folks, I said at the beginning that we have no written rules. The rules are defined operatively during the course of this legislative session. So I don't have a 24-hour rule. I would hope you would get us your amendments by Friday, by the end of the day Friday. So at least we'd have a weekend to put it together and make sure we understand what the amendments are and what they mean. I would hope that when we get together and we talk as a group, whether it's with the Republicans or the Democrats, you might have some idea of amendments you might want to offer, and we can explore them in the two caucuses first and get some understanding of what the fiscal costs might be, if the amendments are fiscal or if they're policy. So any questions? Representative North.
Well, help me understand where you're coming from a little bit, Mr. Chair, because, you know, some of us had bills that weren't heard this year. And so are you suggesting that those bills that you chose not to offer a hearing on, we should put together in the form of amendment and put them on a very slim? Or are you talking about something else? And I would just like some clarification.
Well, Representative Norton, some bills, for instance, your bill dealing with the internship program, which was a tax credit, there were discussions with the tax chair. Tax chair wasn't going to hear it. It would be either off her base, and I assume she wouldn't want it, then it would be off ours. Either way, we'd have a problem in the tax bill. So there were bills that weren't heard for some very good reasons. They cost money, and they had to be booked somewhere. I had hoped that we had put a focus on tuition and debt, and that we would at least try to address those things this session. It's been about 8 years since we've had a positive number in higher education. This is the first significant base adjustment in a long time, and I would hope we would focus it and use it wisely and prepare for the next 2 years, when perhaps we would have the flexibility to do other types of programs. Questions? Then I would hope folks would take a look at what they want to do. We'll set up meetings with both. You're welcome to come and talk, and if you have ideas or suggestions. I know there are some unique ideas recently in higher education that have been in the media. I'm not too sure how we're going to address those, but the legislative auditor is working on some things. Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chair, I'm a slow learner. Do you mind if I attend both meetings, DFL and Republican?
Representative Grunhagen, you're welcome wherever you want to be, and I would hope that you would bring trillions of... No, never mind. Okay. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious on the tuition relief. How do you assure that you talk about that then holding tuition without increase? How do you do that? How do you control the schools from?
There will be language in the bill that will address it, and
definitely.
You'll see it in the draft.
Okay,
so you'll see that.
All right, thank you, Chair.
Now with the U, there may be an issue, as there always is. We're hoping that we can get around that by putting a requirement on the regions to take action.
Okay.
So, and you may have heard there were certain discussions during the region election that we would like them to take action and actually have oversight. So we're anticipating that they will. With Minsky, we can actually put language in.
Thank you.
Representative Greening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On, you know, I think if I wrote this down right, the House, the Senate, and the Governor are all at different numbers, although the Senate and the Governor are pretty close, it sounds like, maybe $10 million different. Where is the Senate focusing? Are they very similar to us in a lot of areas, but then they're adding additional money in other areas?
Representative Greenhagen, they just came out with their bill today.
Oh.
And that's why we're doing this today, so you can at least see some comparisons of where they're putting their money. They did. And they also have a series of stipulations in their bill that we haven't in this bill yet, where they're withholding percentages of money under certain types of actions within the systems. So we'll have the week to take a look at both and then see what we might want to do in those areas if you desire to put some stipulations in. Representative Nard.
This weekend there was an editorial in the paper that touched on a number of things, some of which we've covered in this committee for a number of months now, but one of them we haven't discussed really, and I'm not sure if this is what you were alluding to, or I guess I'd be interested to know if you have some thoughts or ideas. You and I have talked kind of in the hall in passing about regent selection and perhaps some changes that might need to be made in that area to get at some of the leadership and administrative issues that have been made public for many months now, but that really aren't under the purview of this legislative body except for disclosure, which I think we've done, you know, a pretty fair job of doing this year. So I'm wondering, are you planning on addressing that? We didn't really have hearings about it. I don't know where you're going with that, or if you would like some of us to be working on that, or what would
Representative,
you like?
Representative Norton, that's a good point. We will have interim work, and my preference on something like that is to do it in the interim when we're not faced with a region selection, which makes us all a little bit too touchy sometimes. So there will be, I'll have a list of things I'd like to see covered. I would hope you'd add to them, and we'll have then interim hearings, as we did in GovOps on the rules and other things, that we could then prepare for the next legislative session. If the meetings with the legislative auditor aren't far enough along to have language in this bill, I want to focus on that too, because there are huge oversight issues here. Some were alluded to today in Ways and Means, when we can't actually track where money is spent in budgets on certain items. And it's time we should know exactly where the money is spent and how it's spent. I have no problem with saying we're going to fund contracts, for instance. But I'd like to know where you're going to take the money from and which side of a budget proposal you're using to do it. And I'm hopeful that with the legislative auditor we can craft something that would require that, that we would know when they make their proposal, where it's going to go, and then where it went. So, but the regents is another. That one is a little more difficult. We've been through a number of these, but certainly the last region selection wasn't any improvement over the previous ones.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just say, you know, without being critical of the committee and, you know, the good work that they tried to do, I have had concern from day one stepping foot in this body when I was first elected to office. I just have never been satisfied with it. I think there has got to be a better way. And so I would welcome some hearings after the session and would volunteer my time and energy to help with that, as well as some of the other issues.
Well, if you want, Representative Norton or anyone else, if you want to start doing work and then bring it, we will certainly use it. So if you have other areas, this is the time to start thinking about interim work. And we would have hearings. We would actually have hearings that would be open to the public to testify. So this is not a working group. These would be full-blown hearings. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Briner.
Mr. Chair, thank you. At our hearing last week, was it Wednesday? I have to think about it because time sort of floats in these weeks in a different way. But we heard from a range of organizations testifying on behalf of various aspects of the governor's proposal, not having seen, you know, this bill yet. And the students who testified all testified on behalf of not only tuition issues, but also some of the newer funding streams proposed both in the U of M and the Minsky budget. And I guess my question is the dialogue with the student organizations around their support for those proposals and how we'll proceed with that. And I recognize the budget document itself is such a dialogue, but we really did not respond to their testimony. We simply took it. and I have a concern about the work they put into their listening to their constituents and bringing that testimony to us and how we interact with them on their recommendations.
Well, Representative Brennan, I'm certain over the next week we'll all hear from them, and on Monday I assume we'll hear from them again. I just want to caution everyone that if you want to spend on a new program, the money comes from somewhere. So if we're going to simultaneously increase tuition and then have new program spending, we begin a cycle that, frankly, is unsustainable. So we're going to have to be careful here. And as I've said before, I don't know the size of the revenue bill yet. So I'm hopeful it will cover all of this. Hopeful. But I can't guarantee it. Any other questions? Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last week we started to hear testimony on Representative Mariani's bill, the DREAM Act, and I was wondering what's happening with that bill, if anything, and if you could enlighten us.
Representative Rosenthal, it's laid over at this point. We don't have a firm fiscal note on the bill. There are other issues with the bill as far as citizenship and immigration that are federal issues, not state issues. So we have an array of concerns with the bill, but at this point, we don't have a firm fiscal note. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Doral, you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that minutes of April 3rd be approved.
Representative Doral moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. No more discussion, members. Meeting is adjourned, and then we'll be meeting over the course of the week. And on Monday, we should be ready to go. And just again, reminder, please, if you have amendments by Friday, end of the day, appreciate it. Meeting is adjourned.